swinging strike three. He struck out. A really impressive bottom of the eighth inning for right-hander Colby White.
You know, you hear kids talk about these guys that play at this stage and stuff, and every kid wants to, and that's kind of molded me into being able to succeed at this level. Spencer said, "Colby, you just got drafted in the sixth round." And I thought he was joking. Then I started thinking about, you know, how hard I've worked just to get here and just to be able to pitch here. And then thinking about that, I started crying a little bit. Just when I get in, I know I got three outs to get. It's me versus whoever steps in the box. They're going to catch hell for three outs.
All right, guys, hey, thank y'all for being here today. The topic for today, we've always talked about, it's going to be about baseball, but we talk about a lot of different things besides just the game between the lines. And today we talk about every kid that plays baseball for any length of time wants to be a major leaguer. Well, what happens when you make it, you know, when you get drafted and then the organization you end up to ends up being a nightmare?
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy the adversity that our guest has went through, and it's certainly something that I will learn from and try to help me throughout my journey, and hope every kid and everyone will hear from it as well. So let's jump right into it.
Sounds good.
Hey guys, Colby here. As my journey continues, people tell me as I battle on the mound, it's really a game that's purely mental. But I understand that the physical well-being is equally important. Mike and Christy Johnson of our title sponsor, the clinic at Farmers Med Shop, in my hometown of Foxworth, Mississippi, echo the same sentiment. When you're looking for the answer for all your health needs, call or stop by and let Mike and his wonderful staff help you be the best you can be.
All right, guys, we're back for another episode today of Brushing Them Back with Colby White. Colby, how you doing today, my man?
Doing good, man. Looking forward to today's show.
Colby, I tell you, man, these episodes are getting better and better, and today is a perfect example of that. We have got a guy on today. He has Southern Mississippi ties because he went to the University of Southern Mississippi. He did not come from what I would consider a traditional baseball powerhouse. He came from the Jackson area. We'll get into all that about where he played high school ball at. He did play multiple sports, but he did finally decide that baseball was going to be his calling. And after, you know, a pretty interesting journey, he did get the opportunity. He got the opportunity to become a major leaguer. Now, the question we pose for today's episode is, what happens when the dream is realized, but it becomes a nightmare? So, hey, you ready to welcome on the show?
Yes, sir.
Hey, guys, our guest today, Mr. Todrick Johnson. Todrick, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for inviting me to the show.
Todrick, look, you got a laundry list of credentials. Why don't you just run through a quick snapshot of kind of just from high school up to when the day you ended up making it, the dream realized. And like I said, you take as much time naming off all that stuff as you need, because like I said, it's like a Wikipedia page. It's so long, so.
Oh, yeah, my brain got beat up a little bit over the time, so I try to remember as much as I can. Began my high school career at Provine High School in Jackson, Mississippi. In the heart of Jackson, just like you mentioned, really wasn't a baseball powerhouse. We was known for basketball, actually two state titles of basketball when I was there, and a couple of runs at football, but baseball was far from that that look there. 40 years, Provine High Baseball, it was 40 years since we made the playoff, and we actually made it my junior year to break that 40-year curse.
And 40 years? That sounds almost impossible.
Well, yeah, it was tough. But like I say, the upbringing, like the way we changed it, we had a group of guys that kind of got together. We kind of dedicated ourselves to the game. We started in the field with a McDonald ball wrapped in duct tape. And so that's kind of like where the journey began. That duct tape and McDonald ball took us a long way.
So you took New York street ball to the next level, is what you're saying.
That's right. So kind of about 7 or 8 of the guys that was on the team, we was around the same class, started out like freshmen, sophomores. So kind of developed the skill, the hand-eye coordination, kind of helped us out. And so we began to take off. After that, I was actually drafted my senior year, which was 2003, to the Florida Marlins, which I turned it down. Really, I felt like I was underdeveloped, and the Florida Marlins wasn't offering the number that I wanted.
Like, how far? Yeah. When you say out of high, I know sometimes out of high school, you either are drafted really high or you're drafted really low. So, like, what round did you fall in that initial draft?
Florida Marlins, if I can recall, I want to say it was I really don't even remember what round it was.
So, it was so far down there, you didn't want to remember it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I understand.
So far down, I can't remember. But the offer that they gave out of high school was $100,000, and I wanted a lot more. Actually, not coming from a baseball background, I didn't understand what a lot of money was or what a little money was. But I knew $100,000 didn't look like the contract that A-Rod signed.
Right.
So
you saw them big MLB numbers and thought everybody was supposed to get money like that.
Absolutely. So turned that draft down and chose Meridian Junior College.
Yeah.
Which was a really good program. I went into the program, we was already top 10 before I even signed. So when I started my first year, my freshman year, Meridian, we actually was number one in the nation. We had that spot for a while. So I had a pretty good year at Meridian. I think I wound up hitting around 330 and somewhere down 5 home runs my freshman year, about 20-some bags, which was helped me get drafted again that following year by the Padres.
You got that A-Rod money then.
Well, I thought I would get the A-Rod money playing on a higher level, tougher competition. Still didn't get exactly what I wanted. So that's just kind of like how the game go. Padres, I want to say it was somewhere around the 20th round, somewhere in there. What they did was they offered the same. They offered about $120,000. And what they said was any guys that did not draft, that did not sign the contract, what they would do will put all the money in the pot and basically give me that at the end. I was like, that don't sound quite right. So went back, played another season with Meridian numbers. And Meridian was pretty much about the same. So came out that year. White Sox called, threw a number at me. And I was like, nah, I can continue to grow. Because I saw my talent getting better, was picking up weight, getting stronger. So I said, $200,000 still not good enough for me. So that year, I chose Southern Miss under Corky Palmer, which I knew that year was the kind of make or break year. I didn't want to go into my senior year because once you get to your senior year, you basically have no leverage. So, Buzz Mattel, that Southern Miss, had a really good year. Actually, out of all my years combined, Southern was definitely the best year I had with around a 370 batting average. I think I was like top 5 in like almost every offensive category in the conference, which I was up for a Boo Farris Award, which is the top college player in Mississippi, which I fell short to a Mississippi State shortstop. Mm. And so this year, I knew that it was time. It was time to get the big bucks. So wind up signing with an Oakland Athletics, which I didn't think that that I was even under their radar, which we'll probably get a little deeper into that story later.
Right.
But wound up signing with Oakland Athletics and signed for way less than I would have signed if I would have took out of high school. And so spent 5 years, 4 seasons with Oakland Athletics, and had an injury, I think, in my third season. And then from there, that's when reality hit. And now I'm here.
So, just a couple of quick questions. I got a couple of curiosity questions out of the first part of that story. First of all, you end up at Meridian Community College, or Meridian, it probably was still Meridian Junior College back then. And Meridian is traditionally known as a pipeline to another school in the state of Mississippi, not Southern Miss, but Mississippi State University. So how did we not end up there?
Well, the way that happened was, coming out of high school, I made the high school, Crossroad All-Star game. Mm-hmm. And that game was played at Southern Miss, on the campus of Southern Miss.
Oh, okay.
And so, when I played in that All-Star game, Corky Palmer personally came up to me himself and said, "Son, I heard a lot about you, but coming from a program like Provine, I just thought it was just talk." But he told me, he said, "Son, you are the real deal." And he said, "I apologize for passing up on you." And he said, "It's not too late to sign. I have a scholarship here, right here, waiting for you." And so I told Coach Palmer, I said, "Hey, I said, I already signed. I committed with Meridian, and I'm a man of my word. So this is what we can do. It's a 2-year college. So I go down and I spend my time at Meridian." And I told him, "If you like what you see after Meridian, if I don't take the draft, I give you a call." So spoke with my cousin. I had a cousin that actually played at USM basketball in, like, it was the late 80s, early 90s. And she just kind of broke down the school. Like, it was a great school. She really enjoyed it. Family environment. So she kind of pushed me a little bit more towards that direction. So after I spent my time at Meridian, Corky Palmer called me. "Hey, Todrick, I know we talked a while ago, and I was just wondering if you're still interested in coming to USM." And I just started laughing about it, and I said, "Look, so very excited to be a part of the program, just because of the simple fact, like, you remember the conversation that we had. It was 2 years prior." And so after that, it was like it was a no-brainer. I signed with Southern Miss.
It must have been, you know, this is kind of off topic, I guess, but how hard was it to say, "I got a chance to play professional baseball," which so many just die to have the dream to do, and then say, "Well, the money's not where I want it. I'm gonna go back to Meridian." And obviously, Meridian's a great place, but when you talk about doing something that few even have the chance of doing, what was kind of, obviously, I know the money side of it, but how hard was it for you, or was it pretty easy deal?
It was pretty easy for me because, like I said, coming from a place where it's really not known for baseball, like, as I was playing the game growing up, I never played the game for the money anyway.
Right.
So as I began to get, when I got drafted out of high school, it was unexpected. I was not expecting to get drafted. I had no one to really go to kind of help guide me. And so one thing that I would tell kids that's in that position, what they need to do is put themselves in a position to be around other people that's been in that position to kind of guide them. So, because me, like, even when they offered the money to me, I didn't understand, like, how much was a lot of money, what wasn't this. And so I was playing a game for just the joy and the fun of it. And so I never really, even when I came out of Southern Miss, I really wasn't fully knowledge of what I was getting into. What I should have done was probably got an agent and let an agent kind of help make decisions when it came down to the financial part.
No.
Well, when you start thinking about it, and this is just a little statement, but out of, you know, how much you change in junior college, you know, you hear people talk about JUCO up. I'm sure they said that when you were there. It's obviously a different animal to play in the Mac Jack, and the difference between you as a high school kid, mentally, physically, and obviously your talent, of course, had to have gotten better, but it had to be a lot different by the time you got to Southern Miss as far as the mentality of being able to go to work every day. And I feel like that's the kind of things that kids don't really think about. I know I sure didn't, which I didn't have a chance of getting drafted out of high school, but that's something I didn't realize as a freshman in junior college is I wasn't ready for that. And obviously going to Southern and playing in Meridian had to have helped with that, I would think, right?
Of course. Once I went to Meridian, I was around a great group of guys, Mike Federico, Chad Kay, which two outstanding coaches. That's actually Mike Federico's a head guy at Louisiana Monroe at the moment. Coach Chad Kay was the hidden coach for Texas A&M for I think a year or two. And so coming into a program with those guys, like it was exactly what I needed. Like I say, coming from a program, like really not understanding what work ethic was, you hear people say, you need to work hard, you need to work hard, you need to work hard. But they never break down what hard work actually is. They never break down waking up, making sure you get your run in, making sure you get to the gym, making sure you put the right things in your body, making sure you do all the little things to build your body, the mental side of the game. And so when I got to Meridian, they already had a format set in place. So I went into Meridian weighing 160 pounds. After my freshman year, I was 185 pounds. And that alone improved my game. Hands got faster, wrists just stronger. Like all the things that they put into me just helped me develop just by the mental side of the game, like knowing how to eat, when to eat, what to eat, and just the, far as the physical aspect is hitting the gym. So definitely was a tremendous help by going to junior college.
Exactly. Well, the thing that I really liked about what you said, and obviously to the extent that you've played the game, you've got to know that, but you said when you got to Meridian, you knew how to go about doing things the right way, you know, and I hope some kids that hear this understand that it's not just making a checklist of, hey, I did it. It's going to the extremes every day, which, you know, I remember when I got to Pearl River, I heard about Meridian years upon years and a powerhouse they were, and still are, obviously, but and it molds to people and obviously had to mold into you, which is pretty cool to hear. It's cool to hear things that you have kind of thought, but then when you hear them, and it's like a reassuring to that point. And then let's say you got drafted by the A's. What was a big takeaway out of minor leagues? What was the struggles? What was kind of the thing that helped you climb through? What was that like?
Yeah, the biggest thing with the athletics, the biggest struggle was basically being away from home. You take at the time I was 21, went off and played in college a little bit, but you still kind of monitor a little bit. Your parents are still close to you. You still have buddies that's right there with you. So as soon as I signed a contract with Athletics, the first place I went to was Vancouver, Canada. And so you have to get checked in at the border. You got to go get a passport. Like, you are away from everybody. I am, you over 1,000 miles away from home, and so in a different place where the food don't taste the same. So making that adjustment.
Oh, so, I'm with you on that.
Right. Then you go to a team where you got 50-60% of the team don't even speak English. But the beautiful thing about Oakland Oakland is, they are, it's half and half. They draft mostly college guys, not a whole lot of high school guys, not a whole lot of Latin guys. It's kind of like a 50-50 split with the balance. I think, matter of fact, on that team, we only had one high schooler, which was Matt Salenik, who was, I want to say, our second-round pick that year, hit about 30-some home runs out of high school. So that kind of lets you know where his mentality was. He had a mature state of mind coming out of Texas. So one of the toughest things, like you say, was taking off. That was my first time actually getting on a flight. Had to figure out, like, how to maneuver around the airport. Like, just little things like that. And then as far as the game goes, I enjoyed the game 1,000% because it was no classroom. It was 100% you on the baseball field. You are early work, then practice, then game. And after the game, if you have like-minded guys around you, so they'll be like, hey, TJ, I had a bad night tonight. Do you mind coming to the cage after work, after the game, and let's hit a little bit. So you was around people that are more like-minded. So that made the game a whole lot easy. The biggest obstacles is really the organization itself, like far as how the organization is set up as a business. Some guys get opportunities where other guys don't, and that relying like how much money that you sign for. So the signing bonus actually came back to effect, which I didn't know that until I got into the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, like the stuff about it's like, you know, you grow up in South Mississippi. If you try to just go out there and play ball and pro ball, and if as long as you can just get to the field, to me it seems normal. You know, but all the day-to-day stuff, you know, got to fly here, got to drive here, a bus ride for 15 hours, and that kind of thing. That stuff will beat your mind if you don't watch it. You know, you're a kid that's never done anything like that. You're just used to, hey, loading up in a car and driving 2 hours and playing baseball or a bus or whatever. Did y'all have any long, I guess y'all had some long bus trips at Southern? Or were they?
We had a few bus trips with Southern, but that the bus trip never really bothered me. I really enjoyed like being with the guys because we would have different stuff. We would set up like we would have a system going where you have a few laying on the floor while a couple of guys laying across the seats. We would play games, little stuff like that, and the bus rides to me never really bothered me. I actually, that was one of the things I would say I would miss was the bus rides.
Really?
And so, like I say, where I seen most of the struggles with people that was around me was just being homesick, like missing the family, the girlfriends, the close-knit guys. It was several guys who would only play for a couple of months and say, you know what, this ain't for me. Yeah, take off and go home. But I think I love the game so much, and I was so passionate about the game, all I could see was the game. So anything else outside of that, like I think I just pretty much ignored it.
But you got to realize, I mean, I know this, I've heard Kobe say this before in just conversations we've had. His biggest adjustment when he was drafted and then going to the minor league system, he would talk about, when I was on the ball field, I was fine. That was my safe place, my haven. He said, but everything around it, you know, because we always talk about speed of the game. You know, you got to catch up with the speed of the game at each level. But he kind of made me believe the speed of the game, the issue was outside the stadium. It wasn't in the stadium. Baseball is baseball universal, but he said, especially as many jumps as he made, because this past year he made, what did you make, 4 jumps this year? Mm-hmm. He made 4 class jumps this year.
Oh, wow.
So he didn't get, you know, you were talking about living out of a suitcase. He didn't even get to wash clothes most times when he was headed to another location.
That's right. So So that lets you know how great he is. I didn't get a chance to move. They only moved me 1 year at a time.
Well, I don't know. You know, they say he's going to be okay. Now that's barring an injury. So I'm glad you brought that up, because let's talk about your time in Oakland was going okay, but then you had a real setback. You had an injury, a career-altering injury, as a matter of fact. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was 2009. Actually, I was just coming off an MVP season in the low A, which I think I hit around 280 with about 13 home runs on a year. And was really excited. I felt like that was the time to turn the table. The organization was starting to find a deeper liking in me, working with me more. And I could almost see the light. Like, I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. So when I moved up to high A, toward the end of the year, and we was pushing to make the playoffs. We was right on the borderline, which we had a really tough conference that year with San Francisco Giants, Buster Posey. That was the year Buster Posey was there, and all those guys, I think Madison Bumgarner. So, but we was toward the end of the season, and we had a short porch in right field, and I want to say we was up one, and I think it was two runners on. Guy hits the pop fly to right field in the short porch. And so I go back and run out of real estate. Wall come up on me. So I plant my leg in the wall to try to rob it. That wall was right about 12 feet tall. So I plant my leg in the wall and barely miss it. Hit the tip of the glove. As I come down the wall, my elbow was caught on the wall as I was sliding down, which basically just separated my shoulder. And I didn't think nothing of it. The next day, came out to play, went to go throw, and the farthest I threw the ball was like maybe an inch. The ball almost hit my foot. And I was like, what the heck is going on? So my throwing partner looked at me. He said, hey, Todd, stop playing. Yeah. Come on, man. We're trying to get right. We got early work. Let's go to early work. So I picked the ball up. I didn't even have to take a step. Picked the ball up, throw it again. It went about 6 inches. I said, oh, no. I said, something not right. So immediately I went to thinking about the old school movie I used to watch, Space Jam, when the superstars on Space Jam touched this basketball and it, like, took all the athletic ability from them. So I was like, I guess this is what happened to me. I don't know what's going on. So try to throw the ball again, and ball didn't go anywhere. I just walked off the field, went to the trainer and said, hey, I have no idea what happened. I didn't even remember the incident that happened the night before. So go up to the trainer, and he said, just rest. We'll just DH you tonight, and then we'll see what we need to do from there. So I had no pain. It was no pain at all. I guess my shoulder just wasn't attached. So went through that, wind up having to have labrum, had a torn labrum. So I had to have surgery that offseason, which was a really, really setback. By this time, I had been in the game that was like my third season. So I kind of understood like how injuries would affect the athletes. So I said in my mind at that moment that after that surgery, I knew I had a short one. I had 1 year to really just put crazy number up to in order to stay in the organization. So came back and had a horrible year because the simple fact, doing surgery, you basically like on bed rest for pretty much the whole entire offseason. So your strength, like I was just drained and all. So went out the next year, I think I hit like 205 or something like that. And I knew then that was it. You got younger guys coming behind you. And so next year I went to spring training, and there was Oakland, they released me, and I went off and played 1 year independent ball.
So the injury that essentially ended your baseball career, had you experienced anything anywhere close to that level in your previous years of playing?
No, nothing close, nothing close. And the biggest thing was, like I say, it came, the timing where the injury came, it came at a time where I was just, like, coming off an MVP season. And I was very excited going. I was looking forward to the next year. Like, okay, this, we're about to make strides to get into the big league. And the time is coming. I can kind of taste it. And so when the injury came, it kind of deflated me. But the good thing was when I was in California, I met two guys that was our chaplains. And, Kobe, you probably know what I'm talking about, the chaplains that come in to speak on Sundays. So these guys, and what I did, like, my whole career, I kind of was looking for people to mentor me because I didn't really have that mentor as I was coming through, like, for the baseball side or the spiritual side. So these mentors, they basically told me that I had a gift. And basically what they was talking about were connecting with people. And so they kind of equipped me in a way to start looking at things bigger than baseball, I guess kind of maturing as a man. So once I had that injury, it didn't hurt me as bad as it would have if I would have never met those guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because you in your world, it was all about baseball. It was baseball or bust until you met those two gentlemen. And they put the real world in perspective for you.
They put the real world in perspective. So
how many seasons did you actually log in the system, in the MLB system?
Came into the game, I was 2006, June 2006 draft, took off that year, which was a short season. 2011 was the spring training where I was released.
Oh, okay. Well, you got a chance to do something that a lot of folks never get a chance to do. Step on a ball field somewhere beyond high school and make a difference.
Absolutely. And I enjoyed every bit of it. And like I say, the business side, which I know, you know, we joke and talk about it from time to time. I came up with when the Moneyball era was kind of, I was in the middle of the Moneyball era. So, you know, I don't know if people know, the Moneyball was, it was an era where Oakland was really looking at the analytics of the game and not the acts of the player itself. Right. So, like, we were treated like, just pretty much stock, like a livestock, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, so, Moneyball is a common thing in the MLB today, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the game has changed. Teams have modeled that structure. And I was fortunate enough to play with Oakland, which the personnel they had was awesome. But like I say, the business side of it was a little funny. Like I say, I think a lot of guys that probably should have made it up to the big league with Oakland, Oakland would shift them out. Like if they felt like that you was worth anything, they'll try to get that max dollar from you. What they'll do is they try to buy players low and sell them as high as they could.
Yeah, Kobe's sitting over here taking notes. He's cautionary tale for a young guy here. He's over here scratching out notes as fast as he can.
Yeah, it's
I don't want to scare you.
Well, I mean, it sounds, truth be told, it sounds pretty familiar with, and I'm sure it's not to the extent in which the Athletics were because they were on the far end of the spectrum with it, but the Rays, I can kind of tell that, you know, once a guy, which I say that, they just signed Wander to an extension, but once a guy gets to where they really can't sign their arbitration contract, then a lot of times they're gone. You know, that everybody jokes around and is like, well, you're a Ray for 3 years service time or whatever it is, and then you're probably gone just for that simple fact that they don't want to the money, you know, obviously the money side of it. And that's what's kind of crazy about the difference between amateur baseball and professional baseball is the money plays the biggest factor in it, you know. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And as a kid, it's hard to understand it. But as an adult now, been away from the game and like working outside of baseball, it makes sense, like how the business is ran. Because you got to think about it, at the end of the day, it is a business. And so it's what can you provide for me to bring money to the seats? So if you can't bring people to the seats, like what use are you for me? So that's one of those things where that if I go back and look now, you either got to provide a certain skill that can bring people in the seats, or you got to have some type of character or something that can bring people in. Because I remember, like, I seen a few guys that was in Oakland organization. Guys were not the most talented guys that we had, but they were characters. Like, they were fan bringers. Like, the fans, everywhere they went, like, the fans just kind of flocked to them. So, that's just how the game is. Bring people to the seats.
That's right. Exactly. It's all about the money.
Well, it's like you look a couple years back, Tim Tebow doing the baseball thing. You know, did the, what was it, the Royals? Was that? No, it was the Mets.
The Mets. They were packing. They were packing those. But when he made his highest, what, double A? Did he make triple? Did they move him? They didn't promote him to triple A.
No, I think double A.
But I know he packed every stadium he went to in A ball and double A.
That's what's kind of crazy is I played in the stadium that he made his minor league debut in. Big old stadium. Well, we played there. There was like 200 people there. And they were saying the biggest attendances were when Tim Tebow was there playing.
Yeah.
I was like, man, so many people just came here just to see him play.
Just to see Tebow play?
Just to see it. And that's just how the game is played. Like, they look for, like, I watched Tebow. And Tebow wasn't the greatest baseball player. But like you said, like him filling seats, like they gave him opportunities that other guys would have never got. And Michael Jordan was the same way. Michael Jordan got opportunities that some of the guys that would have never gotten. Like, I want to say Michael Jordan got as high as the AAA level.
Yeah, I know he played at AA Birmingham because I actually attended a game that he played in Birmingham. I don't remember if he made it to the AAA level or not. I know they were contemplating on moving him up, and that's when he decided to unretire and go back to the Bulls. Yeah, must be nice to be able to unretire and go back and win three more championships. So.
That's right. All right,
Todrick, look, man, I know you got an opportunity and this you are what I'd consider a cautionary tale about enjoying every moment of your experience, and you did up until the injury, I'm 100% sure, about, you know, plan, you know, you can't plan for tomorrow because you'll never know what's going to happen. But I know this. I know since I've met you personally, you work in the real world with us now. Us old working Joes, you work in the real world now. But besides that, you still stay connected to sports. You still stay connected to the game of baseball. What all little side projects you got going right now?
Absolutely. Right now, currently working with a organization out of Hattiesburg. P360 Sox, ran by Chris Snopek out of Jackson. So basically what I'm doing in the organization now is a hidden instructor, which just giving lessons pretty much weekly lessons, and also coach a 12U travel team. And we have a lot of stuff going on at the organization. We host a lot of little camps and clinics for the kids, and that's where I try to reach out to the kids, especially like the kids what we talked about earlier that has the opportunity to play on that next level. I try to provide a little mentorship to them to try to get them to start thinking about their future plans for the game. And also, I was coaching a high school, Lamar Christian, which this year I think I'm going to take a break from high school.
You know, it's tough keeping all them irons in the fire, isn't it?
It is.
So you got any sweet NIL deals for that 12U team you were talking about?
to say NIL deal.
Yeah, you got any NIL deals lined up for your 12U team yet?
Look, I got two we might need to keep an eye on right now.
I'm just telling you, man, all this, you talking about all this crazy money that that you should have been getting back in the day. I figured you was all up on top of that NIL deal, so.
Hey, I've been following up on it. For me, the NIL deal is one of the things I kind of got to sit back and kind of watch it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of on the fence. I'm on the fence.
You're talking about how it's gonna destroy amateur sports? Yeah, that's exactly what it's going to do.
I think it's ways that it could work. But I think in the first couple of years, like, they're going to have to try to get the wrinkles out of it. It's going to be tough starting off.
Kobe, you got any parting shots for
him? I believe that's pretty good, man. That's obviously a interesting story. It's cool to hear all the different places and things that have happened and the obviously the things you take away from different careers and stuff. I know I've certainly taken stuff away from this, and hopefully kids that tune into this learn from it and learn the ins and outs of wanting to be a big leaguer. Yeah. You know, everybody wants to, but
it's more than just playing ball. It's business.
Exactly.
And the sad part of it is a child's game turns into nothing but a business meeting when two teams meet on the field at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And my advice to them, like, as a player, and Kobe, for you as well, like, try not to look at the business aspect. If you can find the right people in your corner that can take care of that side, the people that's fighting for you behind closed doors, and you focus on yourself, like your just your mental health, physical health, like make sure that you do the things that you need to do to get better every year. Like just as far as you being a pitcher, I'm pretty sure you understand driveline and arm care and prehab and different things of that nature.
Oh yeah,
building your legs.
Oh yeah.
Right. So So focus. I would tell the kids focus on themselves and try to find people that can guide them in the right direction to get stronger, smarter, better every single year. And one thing the kids have today that I didn't have was YouTube, where they can go on and actually look at somebody's story and develop a relationship just through a YouTube watching a Ken Griffey Jr. go out and show his work ethic. I couldn't see Ken Griffey Jr. work at it until a couple of years ago when I was able to pull him up on YouTube. I needed that as I was coming up through the system, which that would help me far as better my game and not just going out there and trying to figure things out on my own.
Exactly.
That's good advice right there. Well, Todrick, we can't thank you enough for coming on today, brother.
Thank you guys for inviting me. Been a pleasure. Hope we can do a part two.
We'd love to have you back in the feed. We were just talking about season two the other day, and Kobe made a joke. He said, man, we ain't got season one started up yet.
Yeah, that'd definitely be good, man. I've enjoyed it.
All right, Todd. Awesome. Thanks again, brother.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a good evening.
Well, all right, guys. I'm William, and that's Kobe, and we're out of here. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
Now a word from our sponsors.
Honesty, integrity, and hard work. These are characteristics that drive me on my journey. The same can be said for Hunter Forbes and his crew. So call or contact Forbes & Son Wood Products, LLC, in Sandy Hook, Mississippi, for all your timber harvesting needs. Hey guys, Kobe here. Check out my new project, Brushing Them Back with Kobe White, currently on Anchor.fm and Spotify. Coming soon to anywhere you catch podcasts. This podcast is an open discussion about not just the game of baseball, but the avenues taken by so many to achieve the highest level of success in the sport. Each episode will feature a guest commentator that will provide his or her perspective and or life experiences concerning the topic of the day. We're trying to provide a new, fresh look at a classic game.